what's up? We are Anti-Flag. This is the Anti-Cast. Welcome to part two of the Die for the Government segment. We're talking about making that record. I wasn't there, but I was a big fan of the band. I found the record later. One of the things that I think
is... I just want to bring up the fact that... Head is not here today. Head is still recovering from his eye surgery, so Head says he can't see, and when he can't see, it's four pieces or whatever.
Yeah, and he's getting headaches from the light, so we wish him a speedy recovery.
Oh, boo fucking who? Can we just move on?
Yeah. But I also but the reason why we can do Die for the Government is fucking Head wasn't on that record, and he doesn't have anything to say about it anyway.
Yeah, we were going to talk about something different today, but since Chris Head's not here and he didn't play on the record, we figured fuck that guy.
Yeah. All right.
Anyways, we digress. The thing that I find most interesting about Die for the Government as a fan, and one of the things that I have subsequently brought into a lot of other aspects of my life, especially when talking to other bands and artists and musicians about what they should do when they're beginning, is I find it really fascinating how much time you guys gave yourselves to create the record. There was no, okay, we wrote these 20 songs, we're going into the studio, we only have 5 days of studio time to record all 20 of these songs, and that's it. You allowed yourself the ability to make mistakes, and you allowed yourself the ability to not know what the fuck you were doing, and that was a part of the learning process, but also...
But that wasn't a conscious effort to do that.
No, no, I know that. That's why I think it's fascinating that but I also would argue that knowing you specifically, Pat, that you could foresee Justin's idiosyncrasies and that...
Are you saying that in a nice way?
That was a good buffer to...
We didn't put a time frame on
exactly,
it and say it had to be done by this time.
Because you knew that you would spend all the money in the world if you did that. So it was
We didn't have the money. And I would agree. Like, I had this perfectionism about it. It was going to have to be the best thing that we could possibly make. And every time we went into the studio... what we made was really bad because we just never had enough time because we couldn't afford it. I mean, $50 an hour in the studio was just, you know, an absurd amount of money back then. And it still is. I mean, hell, $50 an hour.
Especially when it takes me 20 hours to get a take.
Yeah.
And it's squeaking.
So really the reason that we ended up giving ourselves so much time, the reason that we had to find an alternative to the studio is that nothing that we ever made in a recording studio was very good. And we knew we could do a lot better, but we were gonna need more time. But we were so naive about everything. I mean, we were just stumbling through the dark and figuring it out. And it was just every problem we ran into, it was just a matter of figuring a way around it.
But I think that we can't underestimate the ability of us to find recording equipment and rent recording equipment, and how that allowed us to even record a record.
Yeah,
because if we weren't able to do that, we would not be here today. The fact that we said, let's do this ourselves, even the recording process, is the only reason we're here, because as Justin said, the recordings that we were doing with other people with the clock running was very challenging.
But I also mean in respect to the record coming out, as we found out in episode one, program one,
of Die for the Government,
segment, August 20th, 1996. And then A New Kind of Army not coming out until, I think, May 99.
Yeah.
So that's 3 years of touring and sharing and creating. And obviously there was some turmoil and changeover in the band, but Andy never played a single show on Die for the Government. So you were already prepared for it to be just the two of you moving forward. So I think that again, probably not a conscious decision, but looking back, when you're trying to give advice to other bands and other people, don't put these ceilings on yourself. Don't put constraints on what you're doing. You're creating art out of thin air. And if it takes 3 years between releases.
Well, and that's a big thing of that I don't know whether people understand. When we were doing it, there was no commerce to what we were doing. There was no understanding.
It's not that, like a market that needed satisfied.
There was nothing. This was that we actually came from this really amazing punk scene in Pittsburgh with a lot of people who were very helpful and had a similar belief structure. But there was no idea that this was going to be sold. The only reason why you put out a record is so you could tell somebody in Chicago that this was what your band did, so you could go play a show there. It wasn't about selling it. It was about telling somebody that you had a band and please let you play the show. And so that idea of – and then Rancid came in and then Green Day came in and changed the whole – idea of what punk rock was for us, that it was a commodity that could be bought and sold. But really for us, it that did not enter into it at all. And the idea, and then you alluded to this a little bit, that Andy left the band. Justin and I were going to do this no matter, even if we had to make a deal with Satan, we were going to go and play shows, not because we wanted to make anything, or it just was this internal desire that we had to go out and play shows and do this.
Yeah. And to be a part of the community. You know, we wanted to be a part of the punk scene. And you know, I think we felt like where we fit into it and what we enjoyed about it was the music. So that being the case, you know, whether Andy was going to be in the band or not, this was a band that we believed in. There was an ideological structure behind the band. We touched on it before. I think for me, I always saw Anti-Flag as an anti-war band. That was a message that I wanted to deliver. If we were just delivering it to other kids in punk basements around the country, that was cool. If we could do more than that, that's what excited me. And when New Red Archives came into the picture, that I saw an opportunity to do something like that. And I hadn't seen, you know, a lot of punk bands do something like that. So I thought that that was some ground that we could lay down that somebody hadn't done before.
Yeah. So one of the things that I want to, I feel like a moderator on this, but you can
be our moderator.
But the reason I wanted to do that is I wasn't there, and I do have some questions. It's like my grandparents are going to die here. I got to find out about World War II. For me, I think that the big thing that changed the perception of Anti-Flag was New Red Archives put out this compilation. It had 30 some songs on it.
Yeah, the 99 cent
99 cents, and it was sold everywhere. And it had Die for the Government on it. And it didn't come out until November 98. Mm-hmm. So it came out 2 years and 4 months after your album had been released, and it made Die for the Government a brand new record to so many people.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it was a 99-cent comp, and I had never seen that before, and it sold like mad.
Everybody bought it.
Hundreds of thousands of comps.
That was the beginning of the devaluation of music.
Of course, yeah. You were a huge part of that.
It is funny because you're saying this, and I'm thinking to myself, that is of no consequence to me at all because that whole selling of that 99-cent comp is not interesting to me. But what was interesting to me, and then you can finish your thought, was that they took out an ad in Thrasher magazine, a full-page ad in Thrasher magazine, and I was like, that is cool.
For Die for the Government.
For Die for the Government.
Yeah, I had that. I cut it out. Yeah. I cut it out. I was like, this is fucking cool. They're in Thrasher magazine. These guys live in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I didn't even understand how you could do that. Yeah. You know, and they're like, we're going to have a full-page ad for you guys in Thrasher. I was like,
it was a terrible ad.
Yeah, it was a horrible ad.
But anyway,
go ahead about your 99-cent CD.
So what I thought was really special about the 99-cent comp is that it did not have any good songs on it. I'm sorry, the roster of New Red Archives. Die for the Government was late in it. I think it was like track 10 or something like that. In my mind, it was track 1 because it was the only song I listened to. And it, it just goes. So I kind of want to talk about that song in particular as to whether or not, obviously, you knew it had value and importance because you named your record three different ways. the title, You've Got to Die for the Government, Die for the Government, Die for Your Government. But did you see, did you see a change in playing that song? Because I came in September 98. I played my first shows with Anti-Flag then. So that comp came out November, came out afterwards. But I feel like I didn't really tour that much. Like, we had just played some isolated shows. I wasn't there before, like, I wasn't there enough before Christ Died, BC, to know if there was a drastic change in performing the song Die for the Government live.
There was. I remember that there was.
It was like having a song on the radio.
It always,
you know,
connected.
What I mean?
Yeah. It always connected.
People on the underground kind of knew us for that song in a way, but then there was a bigger reach as a result of that comp. There's no doubt about it. But also, we'd been on the road for a good 3 years or whatever, so we had laid the groundwork. So kind of all the pieces came together just at that time. It's amazing, though, to think about the speed at which music was spread. I mean, it was such a different time. You know, the idea that you could have a record come out 2 years earlier and then you're still out there playing on that record.
Yeah.
And that we didn't have a lot of thought about putting out another record. And then this comp comes along and, you know, it's the comp was even slow to get out there. But it did have an impact. And I think it probably, because the comp was so successful, it did raise the profile of the band for people who hadn't heard of us.
Yeah. So that's amazing to think about. And I mean, there were a few. That was an era, a compilation,
you know, the fat was doing,
but they were all $5, $6.
Right.
Yeah. This thing, it was 30 songs and 99
cents.
That's
why everybody had it.
Yeah. Good Lord Almighty. Yeah. And
we can give you shit for 99 cents.
And then you were just like, bad song. Die for the Government, great song. Like, so I think that had a lot to do with it too, where people were like, oh, man, I spent my hard earned 99 cents on this. I need to get something out of it. So let's talk about
I was just gonna say it is. It's interesting that
I'm gonna look at the track list because I don't mean to rag.
I still remember. So we're talking about Die for the Government. May as well talk about this. I still remember sitting in my room, my back bedroom at my parents' house, with my guitar in hand and writing the riff for Die for the Government. And I literally played the riff and sung the words and just knew. I was like, "This is our song. This is what we're gonna be about."
Yeah.
And it's kind of amazing that happened. You know, there was that moment.
I would argue, how many times have we thought this song is a really good song and nobody cares?
Well, maybe that was the first time, and that happens a lot. I know. Yeah. But I think this song is
awesome.
You know
what?
I feel like every song I've ever written has just been underrated, and I wish that I could have a 99-cent comp today.
To blow it up. Just find a bunch of shitty bands to put on before.
I was born too late.
But what was cool, I think, is that was the first time we wrote a song, and I thought to myself, okay, this is a song that is capturing the kind of music that I want to play, and it's in the right vein of what I want our band to sound like. And I think it's a good song. Because
and
up to
also,
then, we'd
think,
written a lot of songs that we knew weren't good songs. We were just learning how to play music.
You know what,
but
though?
But I think we're underestimating the statement of You Gotta Die for the Government in 1993 or whenever we wrote it, 92, 93 when we wrote it. There's a jingoism going around in America. And the punk rock community was
standing up
against it.
Yeah, to the first Iraq War
it was in the first Iraq War was 91.
Yeah,
so it was post that, but in the
I remember. So, sorry guys, I'm younger than you are, but there were Desert Storm trading cards,
right,
that were being marketed to me as
that
a kid.
First World
that was the
first
Desert Storm war. Was the first Iraq War, and so when Die for the Government hit, and I became politicized through music, through the Dead Kennedys, through NWA, and then finding Anti-Flag and realizing that oh man, I could be political here in Pittsburgh too with the music I create. I learned that from you guys. Up until then, there were no role models to me that seemed like it was attainable to put this thought process into any action. It was just other people said it for me, and I agreed by enjoying their art. But I looked back and I was like, oh, it was kind of fucked up that you could go and buy trading cards right next to your favorite hockey player sticker book cards.
Of people that the military wanted to kill.
Yeah, or no, was people, it the, they no, were was like the heroes.
Yeah, it was the heroes. Schwarzkopf, Storm and Norman.
That was the next round, right? Yeah. That was the next
the playing
Gulf
cards
war.
Were the playing
okay,
cards.
Okay, the playing cards were the heroes of the war.
Now, the playing cards, so there's two things. There's the cards of the heroes, the first Gulf War, and then in the second Gulf War, it was the people that they were trying to capture and kill were on decks of cards.
Yeah. But we don't live in a militaristic society. No.
Yeah. so I'm just looking at this track list of the 99 Cent Comp at War with Society, and it's probably a better record than I remember.
you didn't understand
probably
it
probably the Swinging
well.
And Utters on
Christ,
it.
Christ on a Crutch, cool. UK Subs. Yeah. Track 5, No Use for Name. Track 6, Reagan Youth. Track 7, Swinging Utters. Track 8, Anti-Flag, Die for the Government.
So you were shitting on that
Sam
record.
Sam I There's Am some... is on it. Snapper is on it. No Use has 2 songs on it. Why didn't you get 2? I would have argued for that. UK Subs has 2 songs on it. Sam I Am, 2 songs. You guys really got the short end of the stick here. Maybe he thought you only had 1 good song. So yeah. I just think that... it was a interesting end to that chapter of your band's life of, being naive, not knowing anything about...
You think we grew up, like, boom, right after Die for the Government, we grew up and became
professional
musicians.
No, that's not what I think at all, but I think that you certainly... I know that... from making New Kind of Army, a lot of
there
the
was
same
a
mistakes
yeah,
were
that
made.
Was a, that was a clusterfuck as well.
Yeah, you guys still thought it was a good idea to rent those ADATs.
And then the tapes would disintegrate because you played it
and
too
I'm
many
in
times.
There trying to play the bass line of Free Nation, and there's no clicks to know when the song begins, so I had to look at the clock counter and count myself in.
Click tracks were for sellouts.
Yeah, sellouts. In-ear monitors and click tracks, that's what sellouts use.
I just know that, like, you know, there are certain songs on Die for the Government that carry a lot of weight and have taken on new personalities. Fuck Police Brutality. That song came out, obviously, a reaction to Pittsburgh police brutality that was happening. It was an unprecedented time for police violence against African Americans in Pittsburgh whenever Die for the Government was made, but also in the scene. Like, you would, when I was drinking box wines at house shows, when the cops came in, they didn't like
it. Wasn't nice.
It wasn't,
We would request that you leave.
They weren't like, oh, there's been a noise complaint. They like kicked in the door and everyone got the shit kicked out of them, you know? So, how much of that do you see just a manipulation of, well, we wrote this record about Pittsburgh, and now it's applicable everywhere?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's where the empathy of the band comes in, and that's where the maturity of the band comes in, because, yeah, you write a song, fuck police brutality, you know, you're young and you just want to raise your middle finger and you know, defy authority, basically. And sure, it's based on the experiences that we had. I mean, we, you know, I had an experience where a cop was beating up a punk kid and I tried to intervene. The cop pulled his gun on me. And then there was things that were happening with the African-American community, which everybody in America learned, which is just standard routine.
Pre-cell
phones, but that was just standard routine. It was highlighted in Pittsburgh because the cops had killed somebody who was of renown, because he was related to a Pittsburgh Steeler, Johnny Gamage. So it took a higher profile in Pittsburgh. But you know, the song over the years, I think that it's morphed and it becomes something new, where it's to say that the message "fuck police brutality" is a very simplistic kind of message, but really what you're doing is you're putting this idea of empathy out with people who have suffered at the hands of police, and letting people know that we believe your story and that we sympathize with you and that we're here to stand up for you.
See you.
Yeah, yeah, we see you. And so
with you, not for you, but with you.
Well, that's right. And so, you know, a lot of the songs have taken that kind of turn, I think some of the songs for that reason have been able to stay timeless to a certain degree. I mean, there's, you know, the second Gulf War was just the first Gulf War all over again, and we'd written about it in Die for the Government. We'd written about young soldiers that were just used and then cast aside by their government. And, you know, that was what we witnessed as a result of the first Gulf War. And, you know, Die for the Government was, you know, our warning in a way when the second Gulf War came around to young kids that were thinking about joining the military. Our belief was that, you know, if you go and fight in that war, you're not fighting for freedom or for the protection of our country. You're fighting for millionaires who are going to grow rich off of invading Iraq. And you know, that's, to me, in my mind, that's what happens with pretty much every war that this country has waged since
Iraq,
World War II.
Syria.
Sure. So it's like, so in that way, I think that the songs, while they were written from our very limited point of view, you know, they're songs that were able to expand as time has passed by. And that's why I think when people hear some of those songs, they still connect with them in a way that I don't think we ever expected people would, you know, 20 years later. And it's really exciting and refreshing that people do.
Yeah, I think that when you were in your kitchen and you wrote it and you thought, this is the one, that, it's had a different...
20 years,
yeah,
I'm still going to be playing this
trajectory.
Fucking song.
Well, I remember us joking about, you know, man, I hope, you know, we're not going to be able to play Die for the Government in 20 years because you hear the way that we're screaming on that thing and like, here we are, it's 20 years later and we're doing
it. So while we're in the final moments of the Die for the Government episodes, I do want to mention that we are going on tour with Rise Against and AFI, and we'll be touring in the United States with that tour. And on the song, on the record, Die for the Government, there is a song, Davey Destroyed the Punk Scene, is not about Davey Havoc,
which was an interview question that would come up to us all the time. Is Davey Destroyed the Punk Scene about Davey Havoc?
Because AFI's trajectory was a little different than Anti-Flag's, and they thought maybe these guys are jealous of Davey Havoc, and they wrote this song preemptively. Yeah. But did you know of Davey Havoc when you made Die for the Government?
No idea.
We knew of AFI, maybe.
Okay. Really?
Maybe.
No.
When we toured with we didn't, because the first time we played with AFI, we were on tour with DBS.
Which we just learned.
Came later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and we played at Gilman Street with AFI, and it was their Reservoir Dogs cover record.
It is called, I know that one.
At any rate, it was the release party for that record. We played at that party, or we played that show in Gilman. And that was a, actually, I don't know, now I'm kind of confused. DBS were at that show. We met them there. But we were not on tour with them at that time.
I don't remember any of that.
But I don't know how aware of AFI we were at that time.
I would say we weren't aware of AFI
at all. Well,
yeah, AFI, so Pat's memory a little better on that.
That couldn't be. So
AFI
if you
wouldn't
played
have made
that,
sense to me
if
back
you played
then.
That record release show, that would have been in 95.
That sounds about right.
So
we probably played Gilman
in
95.
That would have been pre-Die for the
Government. Pre-Die for the Government, yeah.
Very proud of you. It came out in 96. It may have come out before.
Why do you think we played their record release show? I don't know whether I believe that.
I remember
that
them. Okay. I'm glad you asked me that. It might not have been the record release show. I remember Davey Havoc at that show at the AFI merch table selling CDs.
Okay.
And I remember he sold a shit ton of them. And I was thinking to myself,
this guy destroyed the punk scene.
No, but so, and that made me think that it must have been the record release show.
Okay.
And I didn't know anything about AFI that night. You know, when the very first time we encountered them was with them playing that show with them at Gilman. It might not have been the record release show. Yeah. He may have just been at their merch table selling their CDs.
Okay.
Because
I don't think we played Gilman that early. I think it was later than that.
I
got two things. One, The thing I remember about Gilman is the bathrooms, and there were so many flies in the bathroom, and there was no doors on the stalls. And that was a very unique experience for me.
I loved playing Gilman. I only got to play it once. It was a great experience.
The other thing that I want to say is just to clean that whole thing up is that David Destroyed the Punk Scene is about the claymation character of the
Davy and Goliath on like the Christian Broadcasting Network, that show. And we just thought it would be funny to use the name Davy because we had just seen that show on TV or something. We were making jokes about it.
So that goes to show you people in the world
don't write songs about Christians.
Well, you should, but your actions have consequences. Thanks a lot for listening to the Anti-Cast. We are Anti-Flag. You can write to us at antiflagcast@gmail.com. We'll probably do the other records at some point, so listen back. You can listen to all the previous episodes, programs of the Anti-Cast at iDobe Radio. And we want to thank them for giving us this space to talk with y'all. Much love, much respect. We'll see you when we see you. Peace.
It's not the truth, but this happens every fucking day. Right.